And welcome back to Coast, Charlie Tart with us as we talk about parapsychology, and we'll take your calls and questions next on Coast to Coast AM. Okay, welcome back, Charlie Tart with us. We're going to get to your questions and stories as well. It's an amazing field, Charlie. And are you, what are you doing now, by the way?
Right now I'm writing a chapter on meditation and death for a wonderful book that's going to come out from Oxford University Press called The Oxford Handbook of Meditation. It'd probably be a little too academic for most people to care about, but it's really made me think about meditation and death. You know, because if you take this physicalist view that death is simply the end, well, what's the point of meditation? Maybe it'll make the pain a little bit less, but then you're dead and that's that. But if there's an afterlife of some sort, we have a lot of spiritual traditions that say meditation is a gateway into the other side that may make a big difference on what you do when you get there. Wouldn't we like to know more about that instead of just opinions and ideas?
What do you think of ghosts?
Oh, I'm glad I don't have one. I don't like funny things happening.
You don't think, right?
Right. No, I think I put those among the many maybes in my things. You know, I'm not quite convinced of their reality, but there's a lot of evidence that, well, let's say that there's something about a particular place that's psychically connected with a person or an event that happened there, and some people who are psychically sensitive can pick up on it when they get there. You know, there was a wonderful study done a few years ago by Gertrude Schmeidler, a parapsychologist who passed now, but she said, let's try and get a little bit more objective about this. And she found a number of houses that were reputed to be haunted and would find people who claimed to be sensitive to detecting ghosts and take them there without telling them anything about what was supposed to happen. And then the question would be, you know, did different psychics all say, oh, in this room I get the cold spot over in the corner, or was it kind of random? And it was just the beginning of that kind of meditation. But she got some indications there was some consistency there. It's led me to a wonderful research program that'll never be carried out because it's too complicated.
But you are convinced that all of this exists beyond the physical brain, mind.
You scare me when you use the word all, George, okay? Lots of it. Now, there may be some things we think of as psychic that aren't really real, that there's some other explanation for them. But sure, a lot of what we call psychic is based on real stuff going on that is indeed beyond the physical brain.
And that is amazing.
Yeah, and very interesting.
All right, let's go to the phones. Fred, driving in Texas, east of the Rockies. Hey, Fred, go ahead.
Oh, thank you, gentlemen. Are you having a good time this evening?
All is well.
You bet.
Well, good. My question is, when you astrally project, is it normal that other people can see you? Back when I was a teenager, we used to have a psychic lady named Maya Perez would stay with us summers. And one night, I went to sleep on the floor while we were all just talking and you know, having an evening. She said to leave me there because I was on a higher plane. I woke up at 1 or 2 o'clock in the morning. There's Maya looking at me. And I said something like, hi, Maya, what are you doing? And she shrugged her shoulders and just went poof and disappeared.
And, who was out of their body? You were her.
Yeah, she used to cook us breakfast. And I came downstairs and she said, so, Freddie, you see anything interesting last night? And I talked to her. What she'd do is she'd leave her body and go check on the people she cared about. Is that very common that you can actually see people when they project?
No, actually it's not. Usually when people have some kind of out-of-the-body experience, if they go where their friends are or something like that, they think, oh, I want them to see me because that will prove that it's real. And they get so frustrated because people normally will not show the slightest sign that they notice that there's anything different there. Once in a great while it happens, but it is rare, not the usual thing.
Okay, hey, thank you. Appreciate you being part of the program. Do other cultures do a better job studying this, Charlie, or doing it than we do?
Studying it, no, I don't think so. Doing it, maybe. Okay, because I think you're more likely to be able to do something psychic if you've been raised in a culture that says, yeah, this stuff happens and it's real and important and you can do it. Whereas if you're raised in a culture like ours, where for a lot of people that you're told it's crazy to even think about that stuff, much less do it, that's an inhibition. A good experimenter who wants to work with psychics on this, for instance, will try to find ways to make them comfortable so they can work at it instead of worrying about this. Now, I made a distinction between doing it and studying it, okay? I think every culture has ways of thinking about psychic stuff, and when you see differences between one culture and another, I don't know how much that's a different in the actual psychic phenomena and how much it's just due to cultural beliefs. I'll give you an example. Ray Moody's book back in the 70s about near-death experiences. What really impressed me about that was that people with very different backgrounds reported very common elements on it, like it was an actual thing that happened instead of everybody's imagination, you know. Whereas if Christians always said, well, I went to the pearly gates, well, you know, they've been told to expect that. So you get a lot of commonality, but across cultures particularly, there's some difference. In India, for instance, they don't usually see the being of light that people having near-death experiences in our culture often have. But they often see four figures in black who come to take them away, who then get kept from taking them away. But they're taught to believe that that's the way it is. So, you know, in this life right now, we don't just see the world as it is. There's a lot of psychological processing that emphasizes some things and makes us skip over others. So if you have an unusual experience like an out-of-the-body experience or an altered states experience, you can certainly perceive differently. But that may not necessarily mean that now everything in your perception is truth. It may still be shaped by your cultural conditioning and stuff. So I'd love to see massive cross-cultural studies here so we can find out what really
goes wrong
after you take away that bias.
Let's go to Les in Wahoo, Nebraska. Hi, Les. Thanks for calling on the Wildcard Line.
Wow, that was real quick. Well, thanks for taking my call, George. And your guest got me intrigued, but I was just telling the screener when I just sat down on the porch because it's beautiful out here. The fireflies are flying around at the moon. And I could see Jupiter or something down below that. And I've got my binoculars and stuff. And you guys start talking about that your guest, he used to be a Lutheran. I was raised a Lutheran as well. I'm almost 60. Am I close in his age?
Oh, you're just a kid. I'm 80 now.
Wow.
And I'm jealous of you because I miss fireflies.
But anyway, guys, it's beautiful out here. There's no wind, and I put a little bit of spray on them mosquitoes. I mean, it's absolutely gorgeous. See the bats flying around. They're taking care of. They're doing their job. But anyway, this glorious night, I just had one question I wanted to ask because it kind of threw me. You said you do not – I want to make sure I heard you. You do not believe in the life after death.
No.
Okay, I misunderstood. Okay, good.
Other way around.
No, I said I'm not absolutely convinced that there's some kind of life after death. I think the evidence for it is pretty good.
Oh, yeah.
I also know complications in trying to make sense of it. So I think maybe, and maybe even probably, but I'm not quite sure.
You leave a little room for margin of error, right?
Yeah.
Well,
I'm going to find out someday.
What, am I still on?
Yes, sir.
Okay. When I talk to people about, you know, Planet X and all these weird things that people like us that listen to this show, this big, huge family, it's amazing how foreign it is to so many people.
Yeah, it's foreign to a lot of people, but, you know, also there's a real inhibition about talking about this stuff for a lot of people. So a lot of these experiences are much more common than we think, but people have them and they think they're nuts and they better not tell people about it, which helps hold up the stereotype that these things don't happen to normal people.
What do you think, Charlie? Next hour, I've got a guest coming in to talk about the Shroud of Turin, which some people believe shows the body of Christ. What do you think of Jesus? Do you think he possessed incredible powers?
Whew. Oh, George, did you have to ask me that
Yeah, you're my
question?
lead into the next one.
Let me put it this way. What Jesus taught about how to live makes a lot of sense to me. And, you know, those kind of values pretty much illuminate my own life. But, you know, he hasn't been around for a couple of thousand years, and people have come up with all sorts of stories about him since then. I think trying to figure out what really went on is really, really difficult. There's also a problem, too. You know, most religions claim we have the truth because our founder pulled off miracles.
Right.
Okay. If you look at the miracles, a lot of them look like parapsychological phenomena. But all religions' founders use pretty much the same set of miracles. So they're all right in some sense.
Michael in San Diego, California. Welcome to the program. Michael, good to have you with us.
Hey, how you doing, George?
Okay, Mike.
Okay, so back in like 1980-81, I was having a lot of spontaneous out-of-body experiences, but I had no verification of them. And then one night, I went to see my girlfriend, who was 30 miles away, and we talked and held each other, you know, that kind of thing. And the next night, I showed up her door because I stayed the weekends with her every weekend, and she slapped me at the door and told me all about it. So I know that one had to be real.
That's pretty intriguing.
Now, wait, I didn't follow that. You mean you went there out of the body the first night?
Right.
Ah, yeah. I've heard stories like that.
And she basically witnessed this. Interesting that I never thought people could see the out-of-body of another individual.
Once in a while they can, you know. And, of course, you wonder, how do they see that, okay? Here's something to bend your mind a little bit. They don't actually see it because it's not visible, but telepathically they pick up the fact that you're there and then create a true hallucination that matches you. So they think they're seeing it and they get the information correctly, but they're not really seeing anything. Does that make any practical difference, or is that something to keep us professors off the street?
Can people manifest themselves in the astral state to look physical?
I think so. You know, let's think about survival after death again. A lot of people who have had near-death experiences say some loved one who died years before comes and meets them and then eventually tells them it's not their time to go, something like that. Well, you know, when I die, I kind of like me, but I'm going to get pretty bored with just me after a few more years. I hope there's continuing growth going on. So if I then appeared, say, to a grandchild or something like that, do I look like I've become, or do I put on a form that will be helpful to them, like they remember me as being? I suspect something like that happens, too.
Well, you know, when people ask me about life after death, if it happens, if it's real, and I say, well, if you die, you are going to find out about it.
Right.
If it's real. If it's not, don't worry about it.
Right.
That's because it's done. It's over.
And you'll never be embarrassed that you believed in life after death.
I think death, if it doesn't exist, if life after death does not exist, and I'm going to just say if, I think it's like going to sleep without remembering the dream. It's just, that's it.
Mm-hmm.
How many people actually remember the moment they fall asleep? I don't think anybody remembers that. When you're down and on your pillow, laying in your bed, and you fall asleep, you don't remember that. And all of a sudden, you wake up 6, 7, 8 hours later, in Tom's case, 14 hours later. You know, people, it's like you're dying.
That's a very good example, George, you know, and I really resonate with that because one of the ways I meditate is I try to observe the process of falling asleep because I'm curious of when does it actually happen, and I can't spot it, you know. I'm watching myself get more sleepy, and it's the morning. What happened?
Let's go to Pueblo, Colorado. It's Michael's turn on Coast to Coast. Hi, Michael.
Hey, how you doing tonight, George?
Wonderful. Thank you.
Good, good. I have a story of a few years ago. I was hanging out with a friend, and it was like he was going in and out of demonic possession.
Almost. Oh, boy.
Yeah, he was acting really weird. Like his eyes were rolling in the back of his head. He like started vomiting. But anyway, I was just wondering if he could have like an out of body experience on the other side. You know, if he was maybe, you know, seeing like dead or death in a way. You know.
That's a tough question too. Okay, you know, we tend to have a view that somebody who's had an out-of-body experience is probably lying in bed absolutely still, and you only know about it when they wake up later and tell you about it. But sometimes these changes are very disturbing to people, and they may thrash about. Some mediums do that, for instance. Some shamans do that sort of thing. And, you know, they talk about, well, you know, it's reactivating the nervous system or something, but we don't really know why it happens that way.
All right, let's take one more quick call before the break, and we'll come back with more calls. Michael, thank you for yours. Let's go next to Robert in Stowe, Ohio. You're on Coast to Coast, Robert.
Hi, I'm actually the nephew of Bob Monroe.
Wonderful.
And we met years ago at Joe McMonagle's house. But I just had a question about the term out-of-body experience.
Sure.
Whether that phrase originated with you or who developed that.
So, oh, well, I have a good answer for you on that one. I did it.
You were the one.
I did it, okay. I mean, people used to talk about astral projection, you know, and fashions change, and people said, oh, astral projection, that's just too woo-woo, man. We can't talk like that. And if we're going to be scientific, we ought to have a name that's really descriptive. Well, people feel like they're out of the body, so we call it an out-of-the-body experience. So I wrote an article about it, and I also created an abbreviation for it. An out-of-the-body experience would be an OOBE. And then I realized I had created some terrible karma because people would come up to me after lectures who'd read my article and said, I had an OOBE. I said, oh, my God, I never thought anybody would pronounce O-O-B-E. So I use just plain O-B-E anymore because it's descriptive. It's, you know, it's astral projection involves all sorts of other stuff that I'm not sure about.
Did Robert Monroe, 30 seconds before the break, real quickly, did he talk about that umbilical cord connected between the astral body and the physical body?
You know, I'm sure I asked him about it, but I don't remember his answer, or it might have been that he never noticed it, because not everybody notices that sort of thing, but I don't specifically remember with him.
Okay, we're going to come back in just a moment with final phone calls with Charlie Tart as we talk about OBEs and some other things on Coast to Coast AM. We will be right back. Also, don't forget, like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter. Okay, welcome back to Coast to Coast. Charlie Tart with us, and of course, your final phone calls here. Charlie, the OBEs, would you consider that, of everything you investigated, probably on the top list of this phenomenon?
What's your criteria for top, George?
Well,
most
now that's
most fun,
that's
proven.
Most unusual, I guess.
Most unusual, no. No, in one sense, an out-of-the-body experience is not very unusual because your mind feels pretty much like it does ordinarily. It's just your location that varies. And that's conceptually pretty blown away. But there are mystical experiences, altered states experiences, where your perception and your thoughts and everything changes so much that you can't even begin to describe what it's like. That's the most different kind of thing. And that also, people say that totally changes who they are. That's part of what being enlightened is. I wish I could talk about it more clearly. I wish I had experienced it so I know what I was talking about rather than being an intellectual, but it's real hard to talk about it.
All right, let's go back to the phones. Final calls here. We go to Tina in Arizona. Welcome to the show. Hi, Tina.
Hi. Thank you, gentlemen.
Sure.
By the way, George, several years ago I ordered your aunt's book from a hard-to-find out-of-print book.
Good for you.
Service, and what a brilliant ahead-of-her-time woman
she was. She was a pioneer, that's
yes,
for sure.
Yes, absolutely. And Dr. Tart,
yeah.
Thank you. The reason, what I'd like to ask you is, would you please reveal to us the recipe that the woman who taught you how to meditate what she said to you, because I'm like you, and I think a lot of people, we don't know how to meditate, so we kind of give up on it. Would you please reveal that tonight?
Sure.
Thank you.
First off, it's not a woman, it's a man. His name is Shinzen Young.
Okay.
That's the name he took when he became a Buddhist monk. He was actually a graduate student in Oriental Studies program at the University of Wisconsin, and had this idea, which is really far out for academics, that before he wrote a thesis about meditation, he ought to go to a country where people meditate and see what they did. You can find his website. It's Shinzen, S-H-I-N, like your shin, like the part of your leg, Zen,
okay.
Z-E-N, Shinzen Young. He writes stuff very plainly. He has you work on small sections of it that you can eventually put together. And he doesn't require something that I think was the big stumbling block for meditation for me. When I think back, just about all the meditation systems I tried to learn started out with saying, first, quiet your mind, and then, well, I could never get to the and then part.
Right.
My mind never quieted down.
Right.
Shinzen's approach has you begin to start observing what the mind is doing. Instead of trying to block it or make it be quiet or something like that, you work on getting a clearer perception of it. You know, I could also recommend the webinar that I do several times a year. There's a link to it on my blog. That's more for meditation and mindfulness for people who are interested in it for self-knowledge rather than it comes.
I'll definitely check into that. And George, I'm so looking forward to reading your book.
Oh, great.
To see if
you'll
you
like
have
it.
Some solutions for us.
Well, I'm not sure about solutions, but I sure point out the issues.
Very good.
All
excellent.
Right. Thanks.
Thank you so much.
Okay.
Good luck.
Let's go to Austin in Texas. Can that be, or is this a typo? Is are you Austin? Okay. We're going to Austin, Texas to talk to Austin.
I'm in Houston.
There you go.
But I had a question for your guest.
Sure
I'm
thing.
Sorry, I didn't catch his name.
Charles.
How's it going, Charles?
All right. Yeah, what's your question?
I've been practicing, me and my wife, on the steps towards having an OBE.
The steps toward what?
Having an out-of-body experience.
Oh, okay.
And I can't seem to get past the step. It's like a lead blanket is coming up from your toes, and you get real heavy feeling. I can't seem to get past that feeling. Do you have any advice to help me out?
Yeah. My first bit of advice is don't feel bad about yourself. Most people who try deliberately to have out-of-the-body experiences do not succeed. So you're a perfectly normal person that way. Now, in that case, if you still want to keep trying it, try different systems. So, for instance, Robert Monroe's books have a number of different techniques for having out-of-the-body experiences. Or an old book, which I guess is still in print somewhere, called The Projection of the Astral Body by Sylvan Muldoon and Herwood Carrington, is another thing like Robert Monroe's, of somebody that it just started happening to, but he got curious and explored the possibilities. He had lots of techniques. So, for instance, in one of them he said, the key to having an out-of-the-body experience, he called it astral projection, of course, is that you really want to go someplace other than where your body is, but your body can't respond. So the way he would work to make that happen is just before bedtime, he'd have a nice glass of warm, very salty water, so that within a very short time, he was really, really thirsty. But he would relax his body so much that it was just too hard to get up and go for it. And then he says a lot of times that would make his astral self come out and he'd have an out-of-the-body experience. Now, again, you know, the techniques that are surefire for one person may not work for another person. You may end up devising your own technique. But experiment. Don't feel there's only one way you can try it.
And let me ask you this, too, Charlie. You had mentioned the Sylvan Muldoon Haywood Carrington book. That, too, was one of the books I picked up during the Robert Monroe era. It was
you're a rare man, George. Very few people know about that old stuff.
They were pioneers, weren't they?
Yeah.
And then let's go even further. There was a fellow from England named Robert Crookall.
Yeah.
He may have been one of the first.
Yeah. He collected several hundred cases of out-of-the-body experiences, looked for patterns among them.
Long time ago. Okay, let's go next to James in West Palm Beach, Florida now. Welcome to the program, James. Go ahead.
Hi.
Hey, James.
You know, I'm a little shook up. I usually go to get a glass of water while waiting on hold to speak with you, George, and I went to go get one, and out of nowhere, a giant cockroach landed on the thicket. The water comes out, and it...
Hope said that's not an omen.
I hope not. I need to look up the meaning of that later. Well, anyways, I got two quick questions. One, I accidentally out-of-body... I had an out-of-body experience a couple of years ago. It was the only time I've ever done it. My nose was about an inch off the ground, and I was floating, like hovering, and I was hovering towards the door, and then I couldn't get through the door. My head almost went bonk, 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 and it couldn't go through the door. And I felt myself being sucked backwards into my body. And I know that those things are normal, but my first question is, why was my face like an inch off the ground? That seemed odd to me. And my second question is, when I lay down, this is rare, but it happens about maybe once every 2 months, I notice my body will vibrate. It's not my bed vibrating, and this has happened in different states I was in for a couple of years now. My body itself will lightly vibrate, and those are my two questions.
And that vibration is right before you fall asleep?
It doesn't matter. It just involves laying down horizontally. I've even wondered if I should ask my doctor about it, and I did, and he's like, well, it could be nerve damage. I'm like, it's not nerve damage. And it's not, so.
Or sleep paralysis, some people say.
Yeah.
But you know what? It's just like I lay down and it happens. I'm not even falling asleep. It's just the act of laying down horizontally. I could be on the couch watching TV and it'll happen. It's very strange.
All right, Charlie, what do you think?
Yeah, I don't think anybody really understands that. I get vibration feelings like that once in a while. And somebody like Robert Monroe or Sylvan Muldoon would say that's your out-of-the-body body, your astral body, getting ready to come out of the physical body, and it manifests as a feeling of vibration. Whether there's any actual physical movement that could be seen as vibration, I don't think anybody knows at this point. You could play with it when it happens. What happens if you concentrate on it to... say, make it get stronger and weaker, stronger and weaker, stronger and weaker. Maybe you find you can control it and that it could lead on to something very interesting. As to you floating an inch off the ground with your nose practically touching the floor, I don't have the slightest idea why that happened.
That's gift. No doubt.
I've heard of keeping your nose to the grindstone, but I don't know about the floor.
Let's go to Tina in San Diego, California, west of the Rockies now. Hi, Tina. You are up with us.
Good evening, gentlemen.
Hi.
Hi. I was going to say, George, I love your bumper music. And if that song was for me, I'd say yes.
That song was for you. How about that?
And anyway, I'm calling because I've always had those out-of-body experiences since I was 3. But I had an unusual experience where I had an individual friend who lived in Houston, Texas, who manifested at the bottom of my bed one night, and he was out of body, and he woke me up because I felt the bed move. And then I woke up, and I saw him sitting there, and I was freaking out, and I reached out, and he wasn't really there. And I called him the next day because I was concerned. Maybe he had actually passed away. And he was alive. But what had happened later, I found out, was something had happened to him in his life that scared him, and so he came to me in the middle of the night.
Yeah. There are actually a lot of reports of cases where someone suddenly sees a friend who turns out to be very insubstantial and disappears, and at that time they were dying or under some sort of terrible stress.
Yes, he was. Yeah. What? And I called my mom because it scared me. I'd never had anybody manifest in front of me. I've done the manifesting, but never had anybody do it, and never had anybody report it on me. So I was really scared. And my mom said, "No, that happens. That's often."
Yeah. Cool, well, you know, I think part of being human is that we kind of come with a program already built in our brain computer that says if something funny happens suddenly in the middle of the night, watch out. It could be something dangerous. So
yeah. It's
hard not to be startled by it. But, you know, take a deep breath and maybe it'll turn into something interesting.
We have Mario in Orlando, Florida now. Hello there, Mario. Go ahead.
Hey, George. How are you, George?
Wonderful.
I have a story to ask you, just a quick question.
Sure. Well,
my grandmother passed away April 28th, and just this week I was sleeping, and I was dreaming that I was laying down in a room sleeping, and that she walked in through the door, and as she was getting close to me, I saw her figure, and I felt that she was speaking to me, and there was an instance of me waking up and being conscious that I was waking up and then seeing her fully awake. And I remember there was a moment where I spoke some words, but I don't know if it could have been her saying these words because I woke up really scared and startled that she was actually there.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. I mean, it was kind of crazy, to be honest with you.
Well, yeah, it is kind of crazy because we're educated to believe that things like that never happen. But they do happen.
They do happen. They happen all the time.
They happen a lot more than we think. And if we'd share these experiences with people, they wouldn't be so scary. We'd realize, oh, yeah, that's the sort of thing that happens. There are lots and lots of instances where this kind of thing has happened. When the Society for Psychical Research was formed in 1882 to start systematically investigating psychic stuff, they conducted what they called a census of hallucinations. I don't like their using the word hallucinations, but they meant something that wasn't there physically. And they collected hundreds of cases of someone suddenly seeing a loved one at the foot of their bed in the middle of the night or something like that, and it turned out to be when that person was stressed or dying or something like that. And I think a lot of us, when we die, would realize, you know, this is going to freak out my relatives. I'd like to reassure them somehow. If I can, you know, just appear for a few seconds and smile at them to somehow let them know I'm okay. Happens a lot in near-death experiences, too. People see, you know, it's a surgery or something, and they hear the doctor pronounce them dead, and they think, no, I'm not dead. I'm obviously right here near the ceiling of the operating room. How could I reassure them? Usually they feel very frustrated at not being able to, but the doctors are pretty busy not looking for unusual figures at the end of the bed.
Carol Ann is with us in the city of New York. Hi, Carol Ann. Go ahead.
Hi. I had a strange out-of-body experience when I was 29. I never believed in anything, and I took a nap one afternoon. I never drink. I don't do drugs. And I felt somebody, like, kneeling on my bed. It scared the heck out of me. My eyes were closed. I had that thing where I couldn't open my eyes. But instead of going up, I literally felt myself like Turkish taffy coming apart, and I was literally like beside myself, but I'm kind of strong-willed, and I'm like, no, I'm not going, because it really felt evil, and it didn't feel good. But after that, skeptics make the best converts. I knew that we lived in an interdimensional world, many worlds, and I did have, like the other gentleman, the vibration and like a zooming in my ears after that, and like a going up. So I do know that there's something more. It was really good. I'm 68, and after that, I got into a gazillion books and learning and studying and teaching, but there is something more. But I never had the coming apart one again, but it did not feel good. I was not going. So here I am.
You know, you had a kind of almost universal human experience that people have had through all sorts of cultures. There's a friend of mine whose name I'm blocking on, has written a whole book about it. It's David something or another. And in a lot of cultures, it's called the old hag. And it's the idea that something nasty comes into your room and may push on you or sit on your chest or something like that. And it's so universal, although people seldom talk about it nowadays. I wish I could think of that. I'll try to remember.
Was it David Wilcock?
No, not Wilcox. He's been my roommate at conferences a number. Hufford, David Hufford, H-U-F-F-O-R-D.
Well, I got to tell you, it's an amazing ability for people to do this. Robert Monroe would do this not even by practicing. It would just happen for him, wouldn't it?
Yeah, a lot of times it just happened.
I've had it happen one time, Charlie. I was 11 years old. I had an OBE experience. I've never been able to duplicate it. How about you?
No, I've never had one.
Have you tried?
Yeah. Yeah, I used to try, what's his name's, Muldoon's technique.
Robert,
you know,
Muldoon.
Relaxing thoroughly and whatnot and so forth. I never could get it. Well, once I felt like maybe I was beginning to move out, and it slipped into a dream where some kid picked up a snowball and threw it, and it hit me right in the face, and I woke up instantly. So if something was going to happen, I guess I was told, no, not now.
And where do we get all your books, my friend? All over the place?
Well, go to the links that you've got on there to my various web pages. Most of them are back in print now because of the wonders of print-on-demand technology.
Charlie, thank you so much for being on the show.
It's been fun, George, and I hope this has been helpful to the callers.
I think so. Indeed it has. Up next, we're going to talk about the Shroud of Turin. Is it authentic or not?